So that's why.
It was in a separate email. The link.
And I apologize for that. We're having calendar issues for some reason. We're not entirely certain what's going on, but every once in a while it'll do that to us. So anytime that happens, just let us know and we'll get the link out to you. We apologize for that.
Okay, let's go ahead and get started.
All I got was a calendar invite and there's no link in it.
Okay, I apologize for that, Cameron. We'll dig into it and see what's going on.
No worries. I just
okay. Well, let's go ahead and get started. Good morning. I'm Rick Little, chair of the Washington State Funeral and Cemetery Board. The time is now 9:32. On Friday, February 10th, 2023, and I'm calling this special board meeting to order. We will be providing an opportunity for public comment later in this meeting. As a courtesy, we encourage everyone to mute their mics or your phone if you called in when you are not speaking to reduce the background noise when others are speaking. Also, for board members, to help us capture information correctly, please state your name when making comments. Thank you. Okay, Susan, will you do the roll call?
Yes. Chair Little?
I am here. Present.
Vice Chair Itner?
Present.
Board Member Cameron?
Here.
Pete Cameron? Board Member Smock?
Present.
Board Member Lesord?
Present.
Board Member Gutierrez Zamora?
Here.
And Board Member Ward?
Here.
Thank you.
Staff? Do we have staff here?
We're not going to be doing roll call for staff.
Okay, sounds good.
We're just going to know who they are.
Okay, approval of agenda. Is a motion on that?
This is Pete, so move.
Is there a second?
This is Smock, second.
Then first and seconded. Any questions? If not, let's say by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. All right, so let's go on to new business. We have the International Conference of the Funeral Service Examining Boards. We need to vote on the delegates. Now, Dave, are you going to this?
I'm not going to make it. I won't be able to attend. Yeah.
Okay. So then I believe we have Pete Cameron and myself and Dante. Is there anyone else on the board that's attending? Okay. Sounds like just the three of us then. And what we need to do is vote on the delegates to the conference. We need a delegate and then a co-delegate. So I'm open for a motion for that.
I would Dante, move. Go ahead.
Dante, this is the first time you're going, is it not?
Right. So I was going to say maybe Rich and Pete should be the delegates, and I'll just kind of stand back and watch.
Okay.
So I would move that Rich be the voting member, and is the other person a backup?
Yeah, they're part of the meeting as well, yes.
Yeah. So you as the delegate, and then Pete is your second.
All right. Do we have a second on that?
Second. This is Smock.
Okay. Are there any questions? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, because we need to get those signatures out today for the conference. So So figure that out afterwards. Okay, item 4.2, board training. I'll turn it over to Sydney.
Mr. Chair, before we move on, yes. With the voting delegates, Susan will be emailing that out. And if we could just get you to sign it and send it back, scan it and send it back to us, then sure. We'll get it submitted today. So I believe that email will be going out during this meeting.
Thank you.
So, Sydney, I am working remotely today and do not have the ability to scan and sign back. I can take a picture and email that back. Will that work?
That'll work.
Okay.
Will do.
All right.
Let me get our packet back up. For some reason, it froze on me, so hope that it doesn't do it again. There we go. Okay, so I believe we've discussed this a little bit before, letting you all know that this would be coming. But this is, we are required to provide you with OPMA training, the Open Public Meeting Act training, once every 4 years. And with our entire unit being so new, we received a request for verification that one of our board members had, in fact, received the OPMA training. There is a form that we'll be sending out to you that you'll all have to sign and send back, just confirming that you've been trained on OPMA. When we dug in, we realized that we had one out of our 62 board members that we had verification of that on. And so that prompted the need for us to provide OPMA training to make sure that everybody across all of our boards does, in fact, have the required OPMA training. And then this is something that we'll be providing on a more regular basis moving forward. We are required to do it every 4 years, but with some of our boards having greater turnover and with new board members coming in on a regular basis, we're probably going to make it an every 2 year. So today's training will cover OPMA, ethics, including conflict of interest, parliamentary procedures, and public records disclosure. The ethics, conflict of interest, and public records disclosure was requested by several of our boards, so we're just providing it to all as a good reminder. So we will start out with OPMA. The purpose of OPMA is that the legislature finds and declares that all public boards, commissions, councils, committees, subcommittees, departments, divisions, offices, and all of all public agencies of the state and subdivisions thereof exist to aid in the conduct of the public's business. It is the intent of the OPMA that actions be taken openly and that deliberations also be conducted openly. The OPMA exists for the public to maintain their sovereignty, to delegate their authority while retaining their individual rights, to retain control over the instruments that they have created, and to keep informed of government operations and see how these functions impact them. All right, new mouse, very sensitive. So what does OPMA apply to? It applies to all meetings of governing bodies of a public agency and says that they will be open and public and that all persons shall be permitted to attend the meeting of a governing body of a public agency. A governing body is defined as a multi-member board, commission, committee, council, or any other rulemaking body of a public agency, and also applies to committees thereof when the committee acts on behalf of the governing body, conducts hearings, or takes testimony or public comments. So when we have committees just to work on a particular topic, those don't necessarily fall under the OPMA. However, if the group is going to be conducting a public hearing or taking testimony of any sort, then we fall under the OPMA and we'll have to post agendas and minutes and it gets a lot more formal. Meeting is defined as simply a meeting where action takes place. It does not have to be titled as a meeting for it to actually be a meeting. And OPMA also applies to retreats, workshops, and study sessions. So this meeting would qualify as an open or as a public meeting. Action is just the transaction of official business and includes, but is not limited to, hearing public testimony, deliberation, conducting deliberations, discussions, or considerations, conducting reviews, evaluations, and final actions where the board is declaring a statement one way or another. The requirements of OPMA are triggered whether or not the action that is going to be taken is final. And final action is just the collective positive or negative decision of the majority of the governing body. This must always be taken in public, even if the deliberations were in an executive session, and voting by secret ballot is never permitted. Quorum of the meeting. I don't think we usually have a quorum issue with this group. You guys are always really great, but we do on some of our boards. But a quorum is simply defined as the majority of the members of a public body. Vacancies on a board do not reduce the number required for a quorum. So, for example, we have one board right now that has two vacancies. They only have five active members of their board. Their quorum is still four members, even though they only have five active members. It does not reduce the number that they need. If there is not a quorum present, there cannot be any action taken in a meeting. And if there is a quorum, the gathering is automatically considered a meeting and therefore subject to OPMA, even if you run into each other at Starbucks. So we do ask that you be very careful. Meetings do not have to occur in person to be subject to OPMA, as the pandemic has forced us to embrace much more. And meetings can occur through telephone, email, online chat, or any other electronic media. With that, an exchange of email could constitute a meeting if a quorum of the members participate in an email exchange and discuss business. Simply receiving information without commenting is not a meeting, and that is why on all of our emails now to all of our boards, you will see reminder, please do not reply all, as this is a violation of OPMA. We're putting that on all of them because we have had that issue, again, not with this board, but with some of our boards, it does come up. And so just as a standard practice, we are now putting that handy reminder in there. so please, again, don't reply all because even with a small number, it can be risky because all it takes is you thinking, well, okay, three of us are talking about this. That's okay. But one of you happens to mention it to somebody else, not realizing that creates a quorum discussing it. And we'll get into that a little bit more here in a second. So please use caution when you're emailing your fellow board members, as those exchanges could be subject to and rise to the level of board action. Offline business discussions between members without a quorum could be considered splintering the quorum. So if a couple of you are talking about an item and you're like, hey, this is a really great thing, we should take it before the full board. And then you each decide separately, hey, we're gonna bring this up to another board member and just see. Because each of you have now gone to two other board members, you've created a string of four of you that can still be considered a meeting, even though all four of you were not in the same space at the same time talking about it. It can still cause issues because this does deprive the public of their right to listen to those deliberations. It removes the discussion and decisions from the public view and ultimately undermines the public's confidence in the decision-making process. Likewise, comments or side conversations that occur in a virtual meeting chat feature could also constitute a violation of the OPMA. Members of the public may not be able to see and therefore witness them. A lot of times we have members who will physically call in on the call-in number. They are not privy to those discussions that occur in the chat feature. They are not recorded or captured in the meeting minutes or the transcript of the meeting, and they distract from the orderly conduct of board members and the public. For this reason, you guys will note that this year we have disabled the chat feature in our public meetings and will be continuing to do so moving forward. That was causing quite a bit of discussion that was not being properly captured or being able to be witnessed. So we just disabled that. Meeting qualifies only as a regular meeting only if the date and time are set in statute. All others are considered special meetings. We do sometimes get questions about why one agenda a year will say regular meeting and the others all say special. That's because according to statute, you guys are to have one regular meeting a year and then all others as required. So we label all of them as special. We are required to post the dates and times of the meetings, and we must file our schedule with the code revisor every year, post a notice and agenda to our agency website 24 hours in advance, no less. We do try to do more. We aim for about the 2-week mark of public notice so that the public is able to attend, and then we also send out notices on our listserv. So we do everything we can to make sure that the public knows that these meetings are happening. And we submit a regular meeting schedule or any regular meeting schedule changes to the state register no less than 20 days prior to a rescheduled meeting. Most of our board and commission meetings are classified as special. We do post that notice no less than 24 hours in advance, including the date, time, location, and room number if it's going to occur in person, as well as our agenda. Notice is not required when special meetings are called for an emergency. However, emergency is very narrowly defined, and we're talking acts of God, things like that, where emergency services are getting involved. Our meeting notices must include notice of the date, time, and location, and only items listed on the agenda may be discussed, considered, or decided. If an item comes up that is not listed on the agenda, it cannot be discussed. And the best practice is to refer that item to the next meeting when it can be properly listed on the agenda and notice can be provided to the public that it will be discussed. Public comments are required by law for all regular meetings, and a public body may impose a reasonable time limit. We do 3 minutes. If for some reason there is a really hot button topic, there's a lot of public interest, the board can always request that that time be shortened to say a more reasonable 2 minutes. Especially when you're going to be hearing a lot of comments saying the same thing, it's a lot easier to request. If you agree with statements that have already been made, simply come up and say that, and we'll take that into consideration rather than hearing the same thing 3, 4, 10, 12 times. And comments must pertain to matters within the board's jurisdiction. So somebody with an issue with the geologist board can't come to funeral and cemetery and complain to you guys about it. In response to public comments, the board may request that the matter be referred to the next agenda so that you can discuss it, refer the matter to staff for research or response, state that the comment is not within the board's jurisdiction, or remain silent. You don't have to respond to a public comment. The board may not engage in discussions or deliberations on the matter or converse with the member of the public on the item. You can also not take any action on it. Meeting minutes must be recorded promptly and open to the public for inspection. Minutes are not required for executive sessions, and no format is specified in the law. So in summary, OPMA exists to ensure that the public's business is conducted publicly. It applies to any meeting of a public body and its committees where deliberations or actions are occurring. This includes verbal discussions and electronic communications among a quorum of the body. Bottom line, always err on the side of conducting business as openly and publicly as possible. Are there any questions on OPMA? Okay.
Questions?
Okay. We will move on to parliamentary procedure. OPMA and parliamentary procedure are the two bulkiest, so we will get through those, and then the other two are much easier. So parliamentary procedure is a set of rules for how to conduct a meeting that allows everyone to be heard and to make decisions without confusion. It's important because it's a time-tested method for conducting business at meetings and public gatherings. It can be adapted to fit the needs of any organization, and it's important that everyone knows the basic rules. This is our typical meeting order. You guys will note that we've had some changes from our meeting order from last year to this year. Not major, but it will look different. So the call to order, roll call, approval of agenda, and approval of minutes will all stay the same right at the beginning of the meeting. And then we have a new item for awards and recognition. This will only be on the agenda if it is applicable, but when we have board members who are leaving, we want to recognize them with a letter, a plaque, things like that. Rather than asking them to sit through the entire meeting, as has been kind of the standard practice previously, we will present that during the beginning portion of the meeting. And the reason for that is we had a member on another board who had already left and then was asked to come back and receive their plaque once it was ready. It was during the pandemic, everything had slowed down greatly. And the awards and recognition was at the very end of the meeting, just kind of tagged on to the end. And this poor gentleman sat through the entire meeting, 3 hours worth. And by the time we got to his recognition, he was already on a ferry heading out to the islands on the North Sound and couldn't hear anything that was being said about him over the foghorns that were blaring in the background. So we felt really bad for him that he was there through the entire thing when we could have just wrapped it up within the first 5 minutes of the meeting. So that will be on there only when needed. Old business. New business, our reports format will look a little bit different. Rather than breaking out the main agenda items for all of our reports, we've kind of compressed all of them into that reports heading. The public comments will now come before the end of the meeting rather than right at the tail end. Excuse me. And this is to allow for if a member of the public brings a item before the board that the board would like to see on the next agenda. This gives the board space to request that during the conclusion and the wrap-up of the meeting. And then in the conclusion, we're going to have three items in there to kind of clean up some of the confusion that we had going on with the different titles. So we will have a space for announcements that will be board members who have announcements that they would like to make, that they'll be leaving the board, that they are running for a seat at a national level. Also attendance at other meetings. So meetings maybe that aren't tied directly into the board work, but that have impact on the industry. You can announce and give a really brief report during that time. And that'll all fall under that announcements category. We will have an item for requesting future agenda items. So things that maybe occurred to you during the meeting that you would like to see placed on the next agenda, you'll have a specific place that you can bring that item up and request that it be placed on the future agenda. And then we will review the action items from this meeting and then our adjournment. So really briefly, we really only have two types of motions that we'll use. The most common is the main motion. Simply, I move that we, second, and the vote. You can have subsidiary motions which change that original motion. So as you have the motion second, have a little bit more discussion and realize, okay, we need to change that a little bit. You can change that through a subsidiary motion. Life of a motion is pretty simple. Motion, second, discuss, and vote. Motions are presented by obtaining the floor, waiting for the last speaker to finish, and then getting the attention of the chair, and then waiting for the chair to recognize you. When you make your motion, please speak clearly and concisely. Always state a motion affirmatively, saying that I move that we rather than I move that we do not. For example, I move that we deny rather than I move that we do not approve. That language can cause a lot of confusion for the public when they're reading back through the minutes and they're going, wait a minute, they said approve, but, and so it's just easier and much more clear and concise to I move that we deny. Always avoid personalities and stay on your subject. After you make your motion, wait for someone to second. Another member will second your motion, and if the motion is not immediately offered, if the second is not immediately offered, the chair will call for a second. If there is no second on your motion, the motion dies for a lack of second. If it is seconded, the chair should restate the motion and say it has been moved and seconded, and that opens it up for additional discussion or consideration by the membership. The members can then either debate on the motion or move directly onto a vote. And once the motion has been presented to the membership, it becomes the property of the entire board and cannot be changed without the rest of the members agreeing. You can always expand the motion. Like I said, if during the discussion you guys realize we need to adjust this a little bit, you can always expand your motion, change it to make it suit what the board is actually meaning to vote on. And then putting the question before the membership, the chair will ask, are we ready for a vote? If there's no discussion, vote is taken. There are two ways to vote. The only one we really use is the vote by voice. But if you're attending other meetings, sometimes you will see a vote by roll call where we do go through and call out each name and have each member affirm yes or no on their vote. Usually this is only used in really contentious situations where people want each individual's vote on the record. Other commonly used motions are a motion to table, where, you know, we've discussed this, it needs some additional work before it's brought back. You can always move to table an item and that pushes it back to a later date. And you can always do a motion to postpone indefinitely. If the board has discussed an item and really kind of hashed it out, but there's no real action to be taken, the item's just kind of dead, you can move to postpone indefinitely and that just kills the item. So in summary, parliamentary procedure is the best way to get things done in a meeting, but it only works when you use it properly. Allow for motions that are in order, have members obtain the floor properly, speak clearly and concisely, and always obey the rules of debate. Most importantly, be courteous. So with that, are there any questions? And this was based on Robert's Rules of Order, but we don't have a need to follow the full formal Robert's Rules, so this is adapted to suit the board's needs. So are there any questions?
Yeah, this is Pete. I noticed in the order listings for the agenda items, we usually have a column in there for any closed door session that may be needed for board discussion. Is that also still in the new agendas going forward?
So how we're going to do that on agenda items moving forward is when we list them on the agenda, we will note that an executive session is required for that item. Just helps make it a little bit clearer, but still groups it with the appropriate category. So we'll note those individually as they come up.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. Okay. Moving on to our ethics. The general expectations are that board and commission members should not have a financial or other interest or engage in business or professional activities that conflict with their performance of their official duties. Use of their state positions to secure special privileges or exemptions for themselves is not permitted. You should not receive compensation from a source other than the state of Washington for your performance or non-performance of your official duties. And you should not receive a gift that could reasonably be expected to influence your or reward your performance or, again, non-performance of your duties. Conflict of interest involves the concept of benefit and bias. Questions you have to ask yourself when evaluating your potential conflict of interest include, will your interests benefit as a result of your official action? And would a reasonable person conclude that a private or personal interest impairs your independent and impartial judgment on the exercise of your official duties? And I will tag on to this that there is a difference between legal conflict of interest and perceived conflict of interest, and it is important for the board to recognize that both exist. Some conflicts of interest are very clearly defined, such as acquiring a benefit or financial interest in your contract, in a contract or transaction that is under your authority or supervision as a board member, or accepting compensation from someone else who has benefited from your actions as a board member. Other types are not so obvious and are determined on a case-by-case basis. This includes non-financial interests, professional or business activities, or obligations that conflict with your performance of your official duties. Use of your official position to secure or convey a special privilege or exemption for yourself or for others. As a board member, and this is prescribed under state statute, you cannot accept gifts, gratuities, or favors if the gift, gratuity, or favor could reasonably be expected to influence your performance or non-performance, or the gift, gratuity, or favor could be considered a part of your reward for action or inaction as a part of your official duties. You can, however, accept gifts if neither of the prior conditions are present. However, there are limitations. You may accept a gift or gifts up to $50 in value per calendar year from a single source, and a single gift with a value of up to $50 from multiple sources. Gifts given to family members may also be subject to the $50 limit unless that family member has an independent connection, professional association, or social relationship with the gift giver. The resolution for conflict of interest relies on disclosure and recusal. If you have a private or personal interest that could benefit from your official actions or bias of your judgment, disclose the issue in a public meeting of the board, and once you have made that disclosure, recuse yourself and abstain from participation in the discussion or voting on that matter. The ethics rules.
So bullet point one, disclose the issue at a public meeting. Where this seems to come up is if there's a case before the board and our firm is the one that the case is about. Are you saying that we need to disclose up front that this particular case is involving our firm and so we're going to abstain from voting?
Yes. So when that item comes up on the agenda, you would immediately get the chair's attention. Say, Mr. Chair, I have a conflict of interest regarding this item as it is about my firm. I am going to recuse myself from all discussion and voting on this matter. Then you mute yourself and don't participate in the discussion. And that's to let the public know that you as a board member have a conflict and you're staying out of it.
Okay, thank you.
So this is Pete with a follow-up to that. Fortunately, this hasn't come up very often, but the few that have that involved either my firm or one of my fellow companies' firms, I haven't disclosed that the complaint case was against my firm, but I've simply recused myself from voting because I was under the impression, I think I remember being taught when I first got on that, you know, that the complaint cases are meant to remain anonymous as far as naming, you know, not naming the complainant, not naming the respondent. Mm-hmm. As far as that goes, and we were told just that if we were involved or we had personal knowledge, then we were required simply to recuse ourselves from the vote or the discussion.
Um, That may have changed in the RCWs since that time, but I just made a note of that, and I will double check with Elizabeth on that. Because you're right, those are supposed to remain anonymous. One thing we're finding out across several of our boards is, even though they are to remain anonymous and we don't list complainants or respondents in those cases, a lot of times people are figuring out who they are regardless. So let me double check with Elizabeth and get her feedback on that.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. So state ethics law does protect and limit the use of state resources for conducting official state business. These resources include equipment, office and conference spaces, vehicles, supplies, postage, time, and personnel. Every once in a great while, we do have a board member who will say, hey, would you mind staff doing this? Again, I don't think we've had this issue on this board, but we are reminding everybody that use is very, very limited and exceptions can be found in the WAC. Personal use is considered de minimis only if each of the following conditions are met. It has little or no cost to the state. The use is brief. It occurs infrequently. It does not interfere with the performance of any state officer or employee's official duties, and does not compromise the security or integrity of state property, information systems, or software. And personal use is considered de minimis only if each of these conditions are met. It is not for the purpose of conducting outside business to further private employment or to realize private financial gain, and is not for supporting, promoting the interests of, or soliciting for an outside organization or group. And one area that this can get a little sticky is when we get into like lobbying discussions. State employees are very, very limited on what we are allowed to do with those outside organizations and groups. Maintaining confidential information. Some board members, including this one, serve in positions where they may have access to confidential information. If you do have that access, this information may not be disclosed unless provided for by law, and confidential information may not be used for personal benefit or for the benefit of others. Are there any questions on conflict of interest? And again, like I was saying, this is what is very clearly outlined in statute, but you also do sometimes have those perceptions from the public. For example, with this board, you're a funeral director. Of course, you're going to side with the funeral home. That is not a direct conflict of interest. That is a perceived one. But it is important for the board to be aware that those perceptions do in fact exist, and we do get those comments on all of our boards. And we work very hard to combat them and work with the public to engage with them and help them understand that our boards exist to uphold very high standards and make sure that their professions are maintaining those standards, and to help them achieve them or find another profession to move on to should they not be willing to meet those. But trying to combat that, it is a constant problem that we continue to work through. So just be aware that those comments do come in. Okay. And our last one, public records disclosure. Why should boards and commissions even care about public records? You guys don't maintain them. State agencies and boards are required to have available for public inspection and copying their records, such as procedural rules and statements of general policy or other written electronic records pertaining to board business. So if you're reviewing a case and you take handwritten notes just to help you keep track of things in your mind, keep in mind that those could be subject to public records disclosure. Public record is defined as any writing that is prepared, owned, used, or retained by any state agency which contains information that relates to the conduct of government or the performance of any government or proprietary function. This includes traditional written records, text messages, emails, photographs, audio recordings, including voicemails, and online content such as websites, social media content, tweets, etc. And again, your emails, because we do send emails to you, the public could always request those, and then we work with you on getting those emails. One area that I've seen a lot is people suspecting board or commission members emailing between each other that the state would not have record of, but they would be requesting your private emails. Should somebody choose to pursue that, we would work with you on obtaining those emails, but I have seen it go all the way to court where board and commission members are required to turn over their login information and password to an attorney who would then go through and sift and see what is and is not a public record. Mr. Smock?
Question. So given this with emails, are we required to retain them, and if so, for a fixed period of time or forever, or what's the expectation there since we're using our private emails for a lot of this communication?
So if it is an email that comes from the state or that you're sending to the state, that is going to be on the state servers. You don't have to worry about that. As far as a fixed amount of time, it's a good idea to keep any of those emails for 6 months. That is the standard retention period for them. But again, if it's communication between yourself and an investigator, that's going to be on the state server, so we're going to have it regardless.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem. Is everything disclosable? No. There are exemptions under the RCWs and the WACs that includes personally identifying information such as date of birth, social security number, driver's license number, in some cases addresses, et cetera. Financial information, including credit and debit card information, emergency contact information, and personnel information about employees, appointees, or public officials for whom disclosure would violate their right to privacy. So as board members, as you guys will remember, when you first come on as a board member, we ask you to fill out forms that allow us to pay you for your time as board members, and you'll be required to provide like your date of birth, maybe driver's license number, address. As a policy, we do not disclose that. For example, your address, we are not allowed to disclose your date of birth, social security number, driver's license number. So anytime that information is requested, or if you're traveling for board business and turn in a credit card receipt as backup documentation, if somebody were to do a blanket request for all travel pay, things like that, the state goes through and we heavily redact that information so that nobody is getting your personal information. So we do keep that secure. What happens if your records are requested? The requests are submitted through the Department of Licensing. Staff coordinates the records collection. There is a specialized unit within DOL and within our division that contact everybody involved with the request to obtain those records. And then when it comes to review and fulfillment, that same specialized department works with staff. They redact non-disclosable information, such as that personally identifying information, and then they coordinate any legal issues with counsel before fulfilling the request. As a member of a board, occasionally you may be contacted by a member of the media. What to do when that happens is to communicate the request that you received to our unit, and then we can help coordinate with our communications team and get input and tracking for that, because a lot of times media sources have already contacted the department, but they're like, well, I'm going to go get a statement from a board member just to zhuzh up this piece a little bit. And so we want to be careful about how information is released and how those statements are used, because we don't want them coming back and being used against you or the board. Anticipate community interests, including from industry or public events, and keep your focus on the business of the board or commission. Things not to do: share your personal opinions or air grievances, lobby for legislative action, answer questions that you don't know the answer to or are not comfortable answering, or risk your personal integrity, the integrity of others, the integrity of the board, the integrity of your profession, or the integrity of DOL by making unwarranted remarks. So are there any questions on disclosure? Okay, well, that was it for our board training and on disclosure. If you do have any additional questions, each of these presentations does have resources at the very end. If you ever have questions, you can always reach out to us, but you can also click on those links and they will take you to those places for the reference.
Thank you, Sydney. All right, let's go to item 4.3, establishment of board goals for 2023. Sydney?
So this was an item that I spoke with Chair Little and Vice Chair Ittner on, and we agreed that this was a good place to start that discussion. This is not by any means a discussion that we are planning on being done today. This is an entirely new process that we're rolling out for all of our boards. But we're finding that a lot of times the work that the boards are looking to do, some of our boards will create, for example, something on outreach without really identifying what the end goal of that outreach is to do. For some of our professions, it's to grow the number of licensees or to attract a new generation of licensees. For others, it's to show value for current licensees and the value of licensure. For others, it's simply just to have a conversation and make sure that the boards are meeting what the industry is expecting them to do, or to provide education about what the board is there to do versus other industry groups. And so this is just to begin a conversation about what the board's priorities are and what goals the board would like to see over the next year to accomplish moving in the direction to meet those priorities. Like I said, this is not a discussion we plan to have finished today. If we get into this and the board is like, you know, really feel like we need some more time to marinate on this, let me know and we will send the presentation out. We're happy to provide time for the board to get their thoughts together, put information together that individuals would like to see included in the goals and priorities, and we can collect that information and then bring it back to the board so that we can show you where there's overlap and then maybe where there are differences. Excuse me.
Does anyone on the board have any thought on that for this next year?
Well, the one thought I have, but it's already being considered, is having us take a look at licensing requirements. But there's already a committee formed for that. But I think that's strategically, I think that's going to be a very important goal that we need to make progress on this year.
Yeah, it's good to emphasize that too. I agree.
And to that point, Cameron, I think this process will help keep us on track with regards to having those meetings and making that a priority.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I know another area that the board, again, has already set up a committee on, but licensing future and filling in the gaps with a lot of retirees looking at leaving the profession.
Yeah, I see those two as not necessarily one and the same, but they're both, I think, part of the same considerations, is really looking at what, from a recruiting standpoint, how are we going to staff our funeral homes moving forward, and what does that look like in terms of licensing requirements, licensing options? Are there, you know, hybrid roles that we can consider that currently aren't recognized, et cetera? So. Mm-hmm.
Another one that the board has discussed in a lot of different ways, but the pet cemetery issue and the allowances for that under the RCWs, as the board is well aware, there is interest in at least pursuing the allowance for that at some levels throughout the state. So is that a priority that the board would like to maybe consider looking into over the next year? Or are there any other areas of the RCWs and WACs that maybe we need to look at a little closer?
I know we cleaned up a lot of the RCWs when we drafted the new language for natural organic reduction and alkaline hydrolysis, but I don't remember that we did a top-to-bottom review of all of the RCWs and WACs, and I don't know how long it's been since there's been a complete audit of that to see if there have things evolved in a way that there needs to be updates to either the RCWs or WACs, because they're they're not in alignment with how things have evolved.
I would say in terms of the pet issue that there, you know, there's a lot of, I guess, perception and some issues with how that statute or those statutes are viewed by different parties. And I don't know, you know, to what extent this board can impact that, but if there's a process that we can at least get out in front of it, given, I know the nature and the current status of that legislation with regards to the pet cemetery and other things, is where it is. I don't know if I'm, you know, disclosure wise, if we're supposed to talk too much about that at this point, but, I think that it would be good for this board to at least consider, you know, having some discussions around that particular topic. And if that leads to some legislative changes and or some clarifications or policy, then I think that would be a good thing.
Okay, so with that, and seeing that we have 5 minutes left, this is going to be an item for the next meeting, just to continue the discussion on this. Like I said, this is not something we're looking at finishing out. This is not a hard and fast, we have to set some goals for 23. This is a brand new process that I wish we had rolled out last fall, but it just wasn't on our radar at that point. Moving forward, we'll be making it a standing item in the fall, for that fall meeting, to look at for the year ahead, what does the board really want to hone in and focus on, understanding that we have 4 meetings plus the occasional special meetings to get things done, and where do we want to devote those resources to. Mm-hmm. So I can go ahead and send this out to the board, and if there are any additional things you want to have added in that you would like me to have loaded into the presentation heading into the next meeting, please feel free to send them back to me and I'll make sure that those get into the presentation. Otherwise, we'll have a brief discussion at the next regular meeting. I will give you all a heads up that it will be a very case heavy meeting, so we're not adding a lot of other business items to that agenda because you guys are going to have your hands full. So
Okay. Thank you. All right. Item five, we have a public comment opportunity. I don't know if anyone else is here besides our board, but let's go ahead and proceed. The public may address the board in matters within the board's jurisdiction. The board is limited to directing staff to study the matter further or requesting the matter to be rescheduled for discussion and consideration at a later time. Individuals can make comments limited to 3 minutes each. Prior to the meeting, comments from the public may also be submitted in writing to rbsaadminsupport@dol.wao.gov. Written comments will be limited to no more than 500 words and to be provided to the board during this portion of the meeting. Are there any public comments this time?
Doesn't look like we have anyone.
Okay. So then item six, we have our adjournment. We need a motion on that.
I move that we adjourn the meeting.
Been moved by Cameron. Is there a second?
Second, this is Dave.
Second, Dave. Is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? All right. Thank you, everybody. This was very informative, and I look forward to seeing everyone at our next meeting, which will be February 23rd at 9 a.m. Thank you, and I also look forward to seeing Pete Cameron and Dante down in Phoenix the end of the month and beginning of next month. All right, thank you again, and you guys, everyone, have a good day.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.